everyone. This is a Friends with Fantasy Benefits team preview podcast. It's the Milwaukee Brewers podcast. The Brewers are, of course, near and dear to me. And a friend who's going to give us a more balanced view, perhaps, of the Brewers than myself is our friend Scott Chusick. Scott, how are you today?
Hey, not bad, not bad. How you doing, man?
I'm fine. What's your Twitter handle? Do you do a lot of Twitter work, my friend?
I am on Twitter. I'm not on as much as I probably should be. You can find me at Chusif Esquire, so Chuseph Esquire, like the fancy term that lawyers call themselves. You can find me, just put those two words together and engage with me. Maybe remind me that I should get on there more.
I do quite a bit of work on Twitter, not quite as much as some of the other members of staff, but I try to engage here and there, and we certainly appreciate feedback via Twitter. We also would appreciate if you would consider getting the downloaded form or the paperback of the fantasy benefit. Scott, how much work did you do on the of our 390 plus pages?
I think about 12 of them are mine. I got a piece on using expected stats for folks who have never used them before. I got one on points leagues, and I have and a piece on non-closing relievers.
Oh, well, that sounds great. I've got to look those up myself. The thing that happened for me is I signed up to do four different things, and then Justin asked me with a lot of the new staff members if it was okay if some of the staff members took some of the work off my hands, which I let them do. And so I did the Brewers team preview, go figure. And then I did a piece on more of like an attitude piece on how to approach snake drafts. So that's the work that I did on it. One more question that I want as an aside before we get directly to the Brewers. Scott, I want some feedback from you about how you feel about the three-sport league.
Oh, man, it is an adventure for me. I was bummed that I sort of lost track of the days and didn't get to the three-sport trade deadline in time to trade some of my NBA guys. Right from the start, I knew wasn't very good at NBA, but I'm doing surprisingly well. It's a lot of fun. It makes you think about things that you've never really tried to do before. You know, just trying to value guys across sports is really tough, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's getting me to do stuff I don't usually get to do.
Yeah, and it bides the time for me mostly because, you know, it gives me a reason to watch some NBA games. You know, my favorite time of the year is the summer when I can watch baseball games morning, noon, and night. But we don't really have that option in the winter. And so I do like when I'm at work because I run a bar, restaurant, et cetera. When I'm at work, I can look up at the TV and sort of track how my NBA guys are doing. And I do enjoy it very much. This is the first time I've ever been competitive in a three-sport league. I mean, I think I have a pretty good chance at getting some money back in the overall even. So but running this league has been a task, but I think it's a really enjoyable experience overall. For those of you who don't know, we do a long draft where people get like half an hour get a few hours to make picks. And what we do is you pick from all three sports, NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball at the same time. So when you have the first pick, you can take Mike Trout, you can take James Harden, or you could take, it would have been a bad idea this year to take the Steelers running back, but Le'Veon Bell went first in a lot of different formats. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. Let's get to the task at hand, and let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, who are coming off a very surprising year. They really overachieved this past season. I think they're ahead of their timeline to compete. And the good news about us covering the Brewers is the Brewers have a ton of pieces that are very, very valuable for fantasy. We're going to go through their lineup, and Scott's going to give us an ADP, and he'll direct you to exactly how he got the ADP because he's using some recency, which I really appreciate. And so let's talk first about their center fielder for the last just season, and that's Lorenzo Cain, although he was a Brewer way back when. Where is Lorenzo Cain going in draft,
Scott? So right now, and I'm using, and so if anyone wants to follow along, I am using NFBC data. I'm going from January 7th to January 27th. That's giving us about 29 drafts to look at, which is an okay sample size, I'd say, and it kind of accounts for some of the movement that's happened. He's going right now at about pick 68.
You know, the one thing about Lorenzo Cain is when I look back at his personal history, he's a little more durable than I thought he was. You know, he did definitely missed some time in 2016, but since, you know, 2014, we're talking about 133 games, 140 games, the 103 year with the Royals, 155 in 2017, his last year with the Royals, and 141 last year. So he's even trending to being a little bit more durable. And he definitely gives you this huge boost in speed. You know, the 30 steals last year was really nice, but he's not giving you a lot of power. But atop this lineup, you can hope for quite a few runs. I mean, last year, 90 runs. I think he could do better than that in that category, actually. How do you feel about Lorenzo Cain as an option, sort of where he's going in the first 75 or so picks, Scott? Yeah.
You know, I really like him for a couple reasons. First, of course, you know, stolen bases are harder and harder to come by, and he gets plenty of them. He had somehow got a career year in stolen bases last year with 30, despite being 32. He's a bit of a late breakout for fantasy purposes, but he's always been fast. Some things I really like about him, hitting at the top of the order is always great. We saw a big jump in his walk rate this year. It was up to 11.5. He had never had one before, or he had never had one better than 8.4 prior to this season. He has a really nice batting average and on base, you know, every year. His on base this last year was incredible, 395. So a guy that can get you steals, plenty of runs. You know, the RBIs aren't going to be there. The home runs, you know, he's topped 15 twice in his career. Probably safer to expect 12-ish. But, you know, for a guy that can hit 300 or better, which he's done in four of the last 5 years, he's hit better than 300. You know, that's a really tough category to get, especially, you know, in the, I wouldn't say later rounds, but not in the first few. So he's being picked between like Tommy Pham, David Dahl, Marcelo Ozuna, Nick Castellanos, George Springer. I like Cain as much or more than those guys. So I think he's well valued right now. And if he can keep that walk rate up in OBP leagues, he's going to be a monster.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair area to have him in. I think if I load it up on power, I don't like his power upside very much, would be the weakness in his fantasy profile. Obviously, the lineup, where he plays, you know, how he's trending is really positives in his fantasy profile. But at the same time, I like some of those other guys a touch more just because I have a feeling I'm sort of paranoid about power. A lot of people, with there being so much power in the game, a lot of people think, oh, well, you can get power anywhere. But I prefer to try and keep up in my drafts as much as possible. I think Pham offers, you know, maybe 2/3 of the stolen bases that you are likely to get from Cain. And I like Pham's power a little bit more. But some of the other people on the list, I'm not a David Dahl guy. He showed some flashes last year. So that's a really interesting comp area. Sort of an intermediate area of the outfield where you're going to have to pick the player that you like. I really enjoy watching Lorenzo Cain play. He definitely uses the center of the field a lot. And he's a perfect attitude, sort of attribute kind of guy for the Brewers. So I have a lot of good things to say about him overall.
Yeah, so, and I think you made a great point, though, just, you know, real quick, that he's going to really be a guy that you'll either really need or really won't need based on how your first couple picks went, just for the reasons you said. You know, he's not going to give you power. He's not going to give you RBI. But if you didn't get any stolen bases early or you need some help in batting average, he suddenly becomes a lot more attractive.
Yeah, he's an interesting case study for sure. And the added challenges that we have now of trying to figure out how to build a roster the right way. Lorenzo Cain is a puzzle piece that you need to fit in the right way. But I don't think he's likely to hurt you in very many areas. So he is a much more desired speed guy than some of the guys you have to cross your fingers with late and pray that they give you anything in a few different areas and categories. Well, let's talk about MVP Christian Yelich. who I thought was a really good player, and then saw him for the entire year last year. And on a day in and day out basis, boy, you really find out how valuable he is defensively. You know, he very rarely gives away at bats. Christian Yelich, of course, is the guy that has gotten the biggest boost in ADP from the Brewers' run last year. So how do you feel about where Christian Yelich is being taken, and why don't you update us, my friend?
Sure thing. So Yelich's ADP is 6.5, but I think something that's a little more telling is he goes as early as pick 3. He's going as late as pick 11. So he's right. He's in that very first tier of players coming off the board right after Mike Trout, Mookie Betts. Then you're looking at Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Christian Yelich, JD Martinez, and a whole list of other guys. So you're basically thinking about him early in the first round.
Well, I'll tell you the thing about Christian Yelich is I've always struggled as a fantasy owner taking guys that I think are coming off, you know, really, really huge years, just wondering if they can replicate the kind of season they had and how much it generally boosts their draft stock. Of course, the storyline or the opposite argument is that when he became a Brewer, he realized that he could lift the ball a lot more and just sort of really rounded out his game. But he never had more than 21 home runs before. That was in 2016 that he had 21. So the 36 on paper seems like a lot. He also had a really, really big BABIP last year, 373, which is not something I lean on too heavily. But at the same time, I just kind of added into the variables. He played 147 games. His walk rate stayed up over 10%. You know, 402 on base percentage is great. I mean, it's hard to look through the stat line and not see a really, really strong fantasy player. But at the same time, he kind of died a little bit in the playoffs. And I'm pretty dubious of his draft slot anywhere inside the top 15. How do you feel about it, Scott?
So, you know, there's a lot to unpack with Christian Yelich. And, you know, one thing that's tough right now is really after, for me, the third or fourth pick. There's a lot of guys you can argue for right there based on who you like, what your strategy is, you know, what your league is like. I actually don't mind taking Christian Yelich as early as maybe, say, 5 or 6. A couple of things. His BABIP is really high, but, you know, the way he approaches, which is basically he kind of waits for something he can unload on and then does, but not the type of unloading that you'll see like a Joey Gallo do and hit it a mile in the sky. He hits it as hard as he possibly can and crushes like these line drives everywhere. And I love it. A crazy thing about his BABIP last season, if you look at X stats, his BABIP was 373. His expected BABIP, which they basically look at, his exit velocity, his launch angle, and then the average results of balls hit like that, his ex-BABIP was actually 384. So by some measures, someone might say he was a little unlucky there just because of how he approaches at the plate and how hard he hits the ball when he makes his contact. I don't think you can ever expect 35 home runs from a guy like this just because, again, he doesn't hit the ball that high in the air. But, you know, a 30 home run season, I think that's doable simply because of, again, that approach, how he hits. His batting average should always be a great tool. His walk rate's good. His OBP is good. I'm okay with it. But again, there's so many options in that area. I don't know if I'll ever end up with him just because of how much I like other guys in that range like JD Martinez.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it's always hard to buy at high tide. That's what, you know, the story goes, you know. It's like buying stocks or stock trading, really, you know. Buy low and sell high, et cetera, and so forth. But the thing that happens here is it's hard not to like everything about what he did last year, and it was his first year in a hitter's ballpark. And so I think that's what's really fueling his ADP. I'm not going to ever blame anyone for taking him early, but I'm sort of at the point where I think it's unlikely that I'm going to get him because I probably wouldn't take him before pick 11 or 12 at the earliest. So we'll just have to see how it plays out. Some curious ones for me, Scott, and since I like how you're analyzing all these things, let's just do this sort of like one versus the other, who you going to the dance with. You prefer Manny Machado this year or do you prefer Christian Yelich?
That's a good one. I actually am going to take Yelich there. If I need, you know, if it's a deeper format that needs a lot of outfielders. So like in a standard NFBC where 75 outfielders get started every day, give me Yelich. I like a lot of other options at shortstop and third base, and a myth sort of in formats like that is that outfield is deep. When you need 75 starting outfield every day across the league, outfield's not deep. I'll take Yelich there, but that's really close.
Well, he's an interesting person to compare to a lot of people. Of course, we'll know a little bit more. Although I don't think much is going to change in Machado's value wherever he plays, per se, especially the places that seem to be the most heavily linked to him. If he ends up in San Diego, I think that could hurt his value a little bit. But if he ends up in Philadelphia or with the White Sox, I think his value will stay pretty high. So I thought he was an interesting one to go off of for sure. And I'm going to probably use him as a player comp a lot here this offseason, trying to get a good valuation on a lot of these players. Well, let's not do too much of that. Let's continue ourselves down the Brewers order. And let's talk about the one and only Jesus Aguilar. He's really a very enjoyable player to have seen his career develop. He was by and large sort of given up on by the Cleveland Indians. And last year when the Brewers decided early in the season that they were going to give him a chance at an everyday role, he really caught fire and, a lot of very, very likable things in his profile came out in the long term, despite the fact that he had a bit of a second half swoon. I've noticed Aguilar is probably a guy who's got a huge variance in drafts as to where he gets taken. What do we have for an ADP for Jesus Aguilar?
So his ADP is at 76. He's the seventh first baseman off the board. He's been picked as early as pick 61, as late as pick 128.
See, that's a pretty big swing. And I sort of get it. I mean, he's a sort of a late bloomer into the fantasy world in and of itself. You know, the 352 on base percentage for a guy who hit 35 home runs for the kind of hitter he is with the kind of speed he has, which is none, I think is really nice. And he never really stopped walking last year, which was good, even though his power outage in the middle of the season was better than he was at the end of the season. So, and many people won't look at it this way, but he's a guy who loves to play every day, and he really didn't get a full-blown shot to play every day until a few weeks into the season last year. If you remember back, they were talking about Eric Thames and Ryan Braun as first basemen, as their first baseman last year. And Aguilar, when he got a shot, he really took advantage when Thames got hurt. How do you feel about his ADP? This is also just a touch higher. If he's in the 70s, he's a touch higher than I would like to see him go.
Yeah, so, you know, he is in this chunk of first basemen that are sort of probably not who I want to be necessarily ending up with. I do like Aguilar. I think that he can do a lot of good things with full playing time. I think a lot of the power is real. I'm not sure if I'd be looking at 35 home runs again, but he does look like a 30 home run player. You look at the X stats, you look at a lot of the underneath stuff. It all looked good. He slumped a little, but anybody can slump a little. It doesn't necessarily mean that they can't, you know, repeat what they did. With Aguilar, he's getting taken around like Joey Votto, Jose Abreu, in this kind of area for first base. And, that sounds about right to me. Votto's got some potential power issues. He had a really tough year last year. Abreu was not the consistent Abreu we'd seen before. Jesus Aguilar is a guy that we've seen it and it was great, but we only saw it once. It's a couple first basemen that, you know, have some major question marks, and that's where he's being taken. I'm okay with it, though. Personally, I have usually tried to address first base either earlier than that or much later, just because of how quickly that position starts to drop into some scariness.
Yeah, and that's one thing that people are going to have to adjust themselves to if they've done a lot of drafts over the years, your first thought is, oh, well, you don't need to take a first baseman right away. But this year, you could make a pretty good argument that you need to take a first baseman right away. You certainly don't want to wait much longer than this zone that we're speaking about right now, in my opinion, because there's a lot of question marks around the game at first base, which is pretty unusual, historically, for sure. So Aguilar, I agree with you. He's a 30 home run guy. I do think one of the things I like the most about him that you can buoy yourself with if you end up with Jesus Aguilar is that team did not give up on him last year. They did not give him a quick hook when he had some rough weeks down the stretch. They leaned on him all the way through their playoff run. So I think he's going to need to be bad for almost a few months before the Brewers would get anywhere close to giving up on him, despite them having some roster depth at that position. Let's talk about one of my favorite Brewers, and he also offers up some positional flexibility, and that's Travis Shaw. And I think the most glaring thing about Travis Shaw, and I wonder if you feel this way too, Scott, is that his last 2 years are so glaringly different against left-handed pitching. And I think a lot of his fantasy value is controlled by if he ends up having to platoon a lot or some even versus the tougher lefties, or if he's a guy that they're going to run out there every single day. So do you think that's the big variable with Travis Shaw? And why don't you give us an update on his ADP too?
Sure. One second. As far as, I think what I'll start with is, with the splits there, platooning is really only an option when you have other people to play there. And I am not convinced that the Brewers have a ton of guys they'd rather play, in the infield. His ADP right now is 92, almost 93. So he's I tend to look at him as a second baseman for fantasy purposes, just because that's probably the position you'll be using him in fantasy. And he's coming off as the ninth second baseman off the board. So he's been picked as early as 61 and as late as 123. As far as the splits go, though, I haven't dug enough into why he's struggling against lefties so much recently, but looking at the overall roster for, the Brewers right now, I'm not sure they're going to want to pull him off third base all that often for Hernan Perez. So I guess that's how I'd approach the second base thing, is even if he's continuing to struggle against lefties, I'm not sure it'll cause him to get platooned too much.
Yeah, I think that's a likely point. I mean, he's been, despite the fact that he platooned some down the stretch, and I'm sure that really did frustrate some owners around. I mean, when you're talking about a guy who's regularly hitting 30 home runs, and when I pride myself on the Brewers, by the way, the Travis Shaw that they gave up Tyler Thornburg for Travis Shaw is one of their most brilliant moves that they've made as an organization, because they've certainly gotten a ton out of Travis Shaw. Now, I don't know if anyone out there is like this. I'm older. Scott, how much younger than how young are you, sir?
I am 30 years old.
Okay, well, you're quite a bit younger than me. But I remember Travis Shaw's dad pitching for the Reds. He was actually on like the Nasty Boys teams back when they had Rob Dibble and Norm Charlton. There's a few other Nasty Boys that was in it. But I've never felt more ridiculous than when the middle of last season I realized that Travis Shaw is Jeff Shaw's kid. I've never felt more silly than that. I'm like, how in the world would I have not stumbled upon that information before this? So he comes from a major league pedigree on top of it. And he's, when he played second, the one thing in any keeper formats, I would not look at him as a second baseman long term. He did look like a third baseman attempting to fill in at second when he played there. And I'm not entirely certain that the Brewers are done in the offseason infielder market. We'll have to see how that plays out here over the next few weeks. Let's talk about a different guy here that is another guy who's really alienating everyone, and that's Ryan Braun. He's been alienating everyone since his problems with the PEDs, really. But outfield was rightfully pointed to by Scott. It was like you took the words out of my mouth. Outfield is not deep in deeper formats. It really is not. There are some guys with upside late, and I'm not claiming that they don't have upside, but you can really find yourself in trouble if you end up with a guy like Ryan Braun as your second outfielder. I would definitely avoid that in drafts if at all possible. So what do we feel about how do you feel about Ryan Braun as a player right now? I think we'll be really lucky to see him get through a healthy season again. That's my first major concern with him.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a legitimate point. The last time he played 150 games was 2012. He played 140 in 2015, but the last two seasons, he hasn't played in 130 games. I like Ryan Braun. His ADP is 218 right now, as early as pick 180, as late as pick 260. I kind of like him as long as you know what you're buying. I think that if you are buying him to be a set it and forget it guy, that is not going to work out for you super well, simply because he's likely going to miss 20 to 30 games this year. But, you know, if you're looking for a guy who can provide an okay average in OBP, career, it's really good. Lately, we're seeing him hit more closer to like 260 with an OBP of around like 320. But for a guy that can still hit 20 to 25 home runs and steal 10 to 15 bases, that's a really good price for something like that. I think that he's going to continue to get playing time when healthy. That's always going to be the sort of concern for him. He's got to be healthy. But what we keep seeing is when he is on the field, he hits the ball really well, and he provides stats for us in pretty much every category. So at a, after pick 200, looking at a guy who can really provide some value, where the only risk you need to be concerned about is he playing? Is he healthy? But when he's playing, we know what we're going to get. So I'm okay with that. Not so much in a shallow league, but in a deep league, I'll take that value for his at-bats, knowing that I'll probably need to get another outfielder to fill in once in a while.
Well, for the people out there who do the draft and holds this time of the year, I would say this, it's a give and take. I mean, it is nice that you can change out your, it's not a pure weekly format. NFBC isn't. You can change your offensive players for the weekend. So that's nice. So you can monitor his health a little extra that way. But at the same time, of course, he's somebody, if he runs into a month and a half or 2 month kind of injury, that could really hurt your depth as well. So I think that's where the give and take comes in with Braun. There's very few MVP caliber talents that are really in the league. And one of the MVP level talents is definitely Ryan Braun.
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, The Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market. With featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and FanGraphs, and many more, you will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
Well, since we're largely in agreement on Ryan Braun that he can fit certain bills exceptionally well, let's move on to Yasmani Grandal, who, of course, is the big offseason acquisition for the Brewers in Brewers style. He's only a one-year acquisition for them. I have some personal questions about how he's going to fit exactly on the roster. I think the move to Milwaukee certainly should lift his value. It's a really good place for left-handed power hitters. So how do you feel about Yasmani Grandal? I know his value is definitely boosted in OBP leagues because for a catcher, he really does a nice job of getting on base.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Grandal right now, his ADP is 130. That's a min pick of 96. He's been taken as late as 150, and he's really in this blob of catchers that we are seeing all taken at the same time. So if you've had a chance to do any mocks yet, you're probably noticing there is a catcher run, particularly this is, and of course this is two catcher formats that we're talking about, one catcher formats. I don't have a lot of ADP data on those right now, but I'd imagine it's much later. But in these two catcher formats, there's this run that goes on first catchers, and it starts usually with Sal Perez. His ADP is 108, so it's a little earlier than these guys, but really you see them all get taken around the same time. You see Sal Perez, Yasmani Grandal, Wilson Ramos, Yadier Molina, Wilson Contreras, and Buster Posey all go in this big flurry. They all kind of go together, and I really like Grandal, particularly in OBP leagues, thanks to this great landing spot he's got in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot to like about Grandal in this fit. I mean, I think my questions are, you know, I paid special attention to him during the playoffs, and that's when he was having his defensive blips. But at the same time, the counter argument to him is that he seems to be a really good thrower. He's been an above average defensive catcher in recent years. So it's hard for me to know exactly how this experiment is going to go. And it's not going to last very long, I don't think, because I doubt he's the kind of guy who's going to end up signing long term with the Brewers. So it's an interesting bang for your buck scenario. I'm curious, what would you predict for home runs for Grandal this year?
Part of me wants to give him a nice boost that he's in a better park to hit home runs than Dodger Stadium. At the same time, I'm not sure it's enough for me to move it way up. I'm going to say about 25. We have this really nice sample over the last 3 years where he's hit between 24 and 27. He's played in, you know, usually between 125 and 140 games. I think that'll all continue. I'm going to say 25, so a little in the higher end of his range, I think, just because of, you know, where he is, and he's got some nice places to put the ball in, you know, where the Brewers play. I can't remember the name of the new stadium. I just remember I hated it, but I still think he'll be able to hit well there.
Well, it's not – the name is still going to be Miller Park for the next 2 years, but then after that it's American Family Insurance, which some people are saying it's going to be AmFam Stadium. I don't know if that's how they're going to do it or they're not going to do it. Maybe that'll be just the nickname or what have you. So that's something – that's a hurdle a lot of us people around here are going to have to get over. And, you know, it happens. I mean, Miller – is so in tune with Milwaukee that I think that's why there's this people are offended by the idea that they're going to have a different moniker going forward, because Miller and Milwaukee are so in tune to each other in a general basis. I think you make good points about Grandal. I think there's people who think and believe that he can get up to the low to mid 30s because of being in a better park for left-handed power. He's a switch hitter, but obviously he's going to bat more from the left side because he'll face more righties than lefties. That's the one variable here that I think is most interesting. And as I mentioned before, we're talking about a huge difference between him in batting average formats and OBP formats. For a catcher who can get up over 350 for his OBP and can offer you maybe high 20s to mid 30s in home runs, there's a lot to be said for that. He's also batting in a pretty good spot in the order where you could see him get enough RBI opportunities to be on the upper end of where he's been RBI-wise as well. So there's a lot to like about him. I like him a ton more than Sal Perez, that's for sure. But Sal Perez is one of those guys that kind of mystifies me, his draft position. And I'm a little leery yet. I want to see Buster Posey playing catcher from the injuries and stuff that he's gone through. I know all the offseason reports are good, but those kind of scare me until I really see him in action on a regular basis. So there's some of these upper tier catchers are going to be very difficult to gauge. And we don't really know where Realmuto is going to go yet. So we have some struggles. We have a ways to go yet in really understanding and being able to analyze the catcher market. Because there's an overall in NFBC formats, there's a lot of people don't like to punt catching because you feel like you have to get production everywhere to do well in an overall. So I think Grandal is the kind of guy whose value is going to vary a great deal upon format. But the one thing we know is, you know, he turned down a multi-year deal for a single-year deal. That usually means that he wants to get out of the draft pick compensation format, and he also is willing to put himself out there and say, look, I deserve more than what I was being offered. So there's a lot of different ways that this could work out really well. And so it's going to be really interesting storyline as we move forward and into this upcoming baseball season for Yasmani Grandal. The last guy in their lineup is Orlando Arcia. And I do think people have a tendency to forget how young he is. At the same time, shortstop has turned into a pretty deep position. And I think Orlando Arcia, you know, kind of makes his way out as a endgame play here with, I think, a little bit of upside. I mean, we saw more a couple years back, more speed and a little more pop. But his plate approach has never been great. So is Orlando Arcia an endgame play for you, or are you avoiding him?
I have not taken him in any drafts yet. I have pulled it up. I've looked at him out of curiosity because he was, I mean, you know, in 2017, we saw him, you know, he hit 15 home runs, stole 14 bases, decent. I mean, he had a pretty good batting average, 277, 324 OBP. He wasn't a bad little shortstop to have. He played every day. And then we just saw him fall off a cliff, you know, last year. He couldn't take walks. He struck out, you know, quite a bit more. He hit 236 with a 268 OBP. I haven't taken him. I don't know if I will, just because, you know, he's, you know, his ADP is 436. So in a lot of leagues, he's not getting drafted. He might be worth throwing on my watch list in a couple leagues, particularly 15 teamers, as a potential middle infield option if it looks like he might be fixing some of his plate discipline issues. But, you know, barely, you know, it's hard to see him as more than a 10 to 12 home run, 10 to 12 stolen base guy. And I'd probably be looking at more upside out there in terms of stats. I think he might be a nice player for the Brewers in real life for quite a while, but I think for fantasy, he's going to be tough to use unless he can show that he can consistently do what he did in 2017.
Yeah, he's got some work to do to get back in the good eyes, good graces of fantasy owners. For certain, he even got sent down for a while last year. I do think his defense keeps him on the field. You can do worse in deeper formats than him as an end game play for extra, you know, for extra guy to put in if injuries start to hit you. But he's also not somebody that I would rely on for much of anything, because when his plate approach is bad, and as bad as it was last year, it makes it hard for him to get stolen base opportunities even on a team where they come pretty readily. So he's somebody to keep an eye on and see how it all unfolds. The other slow starting shortstops for the Brewers have developed pretty well over time. You know, speaking about Gene Segura, in, you know, putting him in focus. So we will have to see what happens with Arcia. The only other player I want to touch on offensively for the Brewers is Corey Spangenberg. Right now, you know, he was really, really considered a fantasy sleeper for the last 3 years or so, but he hasn't done much with the bat at the major league level. He is on the right side of a platoon as of right now at second base. So would you rather have Spangenberg or would you rather have Arcia?
Definitely Arcia. So, you know, Spangenberg, he's shown flashes, but I think as far as a fantasy perspective, I see Spangenberg as basically a block to some of the prospects coming up for the Brewers. So yeah, I'm not sure he's going to stick there for very long. And even if he does, you know, he's a barely on the radar guy for me in NL onlys, because I know he's going to be playing. And in the only leagues, a lot of times the toughest stat to find is plate appearances. And I do think, at least for the start of the year, Spangenberg's going to get them. I just don't know the quality of them, particularly in a mixed league contest.
Yeah, I mean, it's an up-in-the-air scenario. I've spent the last few weeks trying to explain to people that I still think the Brewers have one middle infield or one infield move left in them, because I don't think they trust Hernan Perez to play a lot. So the only other person that I would want to touch on sort of in deeper formats is I do think Ben Gamel is going to play quite a bit more than most people think. You know, they acquired him from Seattle. They obviously like him a little bit. And now that they've gotten rid of Keon Broxton and gotten rid of Domingo Santana, I think Ben Gamel's a guy who could see a lot more time than you would first think. And because of that, he may have value as a really deep draft kind of guy that you'll be able to get more plate appearances for and a little extra insurance in the outfield. Well, you know, their lineup is a lot of fun to cover, but their pitching staff is not as much fun to cover when it comes to starters. I do think, you know, I don't think we have to spend much time on Chase Anderson or Zach Davies or even Jimmy Nelson, because I think those are all wait and see kind of guys to see exactly what they have. Jimmy Nelson, of course, has a great deal of upside. What on the Brewers staff, what starters really jump out at you? Are there people that you're excited about taking? Because one thing the Brewers don't have is they don't have highly touted starting pitchers yet at this point.
No, and, you know, the Brewers rotation is really the surprise, like the surprising effectiveness of their rotation last year, I think, is what drove a lot of their success. And I'm not sure how much you can bet on it again. You know, there's a lot of guys here that, you know, you can think about and sort of the back end of your rotation, maybe, or, you know, first guy off your bench for your rotation, draft and hold guys to grab for innings. But, you know, really none of these four guys really jump off the page in terms of a really great fantasy asset. We've really got to see if Chacin can keep doing what he did last year. I mean, he's got one great pitch and then a lot of very average ones. You know, Chase Anderson has been sort of up and down, but he kind of still looks like a low four, you know, a low fours ERA kind of guy for the most part, with an unexciting strikeout rate. Zach Davies, you know, for a while, I know, you know, there were certain analysts that were really pumping up his potential, but it never really just panned out. I've never really felt that he can, you know, really provide anything on a high level. Really, from a fantasy perspective, you know, a lot of their interesting guys come out of the bullpen. As far as starters go, it's really hard to be too excited. I think a couple of them are worth owning. Chase Anderson and Chacin will probably find their way to, you know, someone's team in every 15-team league, but I don't think it's ever going to be like, oh man, great pick. It's more of a, oh, okay, he needs a pitcher. And that's probably the right approach to take for most of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I have is I have respect for Chacin's game, so I do think he's not the worst end game stabilizer for a staff. But the upside to me here, I don't think Jimmy Nelson is going to be fully healthy for the first few months. They said he's going to be limited in spring. So although he's got really big upside, if he can be back healthy and he's somebody to keep an eye on, I think the guys I would watch most closely are Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes. And it's odd because Brandon Woodruff is penciled into a starting spot, and obviously he has to adjust to being a full-time starter. They could use some form of an opener with him as well. We're not exactly sure yet at this point. But Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes, I think, have very big upside. We haven't always seen it in Brandon Woodruff's numbers. We have seen it so far in Corbin Burnes' numbers. And Corbin Burnes, of course, was the more highly touted prospect of the two. And the thing about when you draft Burnes is you have to figure, well, I'm either getting holds if they keep him in the bullpen for a while, and good relief innings, you know, more than an inning, more than a K per inning kind of stuff. You're either getting a really good reliever profile or you're getting a late game starter that's got long-term number two possibilities. Matt Thompson even said so much today. So I kind of wanted to verify my thoughts with him because I was really impressed with Burnes last year. So those are two guys I would keep a special watch on if I was you guys out there trying to figure out how to get some value from the Brewers starters, because they will get some offensive support over time, that's for sure. Let's go ahead. You have a comment on those two guys?
You know, not so much. I think that I did want to say, I think it's going to be a very difficult choice for the, you know, for the Brewers, you know, especially at the back end of that rotation, because they have some guys that were just electric out of the bullpen last year, like a Corbin Burnes. But, you know, there's going to be this tension of he's been so good in the bullpen. Do we take him out to put him in the rotation, or do we, you know, do we just have him come in earlier? So I think when you're looking at the Brewers rotation specifically, if they struggle, I think the first thing I'd expect to see is for all of them to pitch less per outing and have some of the strength of this bullpen jump out and start games earlier. Because we're going to be talking about it soon, I'm sure. But that bullpen, especially at the top end, is really good.
Yeah, it's so good, in fact, that it's kind of what leads me away from them in a lot of formats. It's good, and they're relatively young yet with Knebel and Hader. Obviously, Jeffress is a veteran who's always pitched better in Milwaukee than he's pitched anywhere else. But Jeffress is the one that makes this kind of even more confusing than it would normally be. You know, Hader was used the way that we thought Andrew Miller was going to be used for the years before that, meaning that he was so good in sort of middle relief that we thought, you know, Andrew Miller was going to end up with 15 or 20 saves. Well, last year, Hader had to fill in for a while when Knebel was down, and they sort of play it situationally. I think the biggest thing that I want to warn people against is I would not take Corey Knebel and automatically have him penciled in as both their closer and as a being used as a traditional closer, because I am not convinced of that at all. When he came back from the minors last year, they said that they were using him in middle relief because they wanted to be able to use him for longer outings. They thought that was even better if he was used a little bit more, so he could, you know, use his breaking pitches better on top of having the 96 mile an hour gas. So I don't know that I trust any of these people to be a traditional closer. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that a lot of people are looking at it as Knebel's the closer, Hader is the Andrew Miller fireman type guy, and Jeffress is sort of there as well in the seventh and eighth. You know, ADP is really interesting here because Knebel's actually the one that's going before any of them. His ADP right now is 112. We're seeing Knebel taken at about 157. And then Jeffress is basically an afterthought. His ADP is all the way down at 360. It is hard to get a grip on exactly what they want to do. Again, I think it does make sense to see what they did, you know, kind of early in the year last year. Knebel in the back end, Hader as the guy coming in the most crucial inning, and then Jeffress there as well. And even as the, in theory, second in line for saves, just, you know, if they do a very traditional bullpen. But they have so many reasons not to, due to the strength of all three of those guys. And, you know, guys that aren't, you know, that we've already talked about a little in Corbin Burnes is in there too. And if he comes out of the bullpen, he's going to add, you know, some value there. You know, the rest of the middle relief isn't that great, but man, the back end of that bullpen, they've got three guys that are amazing. Corbin Burnes can be a fourth, and not a lot of teams are looking at that kind of depth. So it's really hard to say. I do think Knebel is the most likely to be if they have a traditional closer, I do think it'll be Knebel. And, you know, he's got absolutely electric strikeout stuff, but I do think I value Hader more in fantasy, at least as a gamble right now, because even if he doesn't get saves, we know that he's going to throw close to 100 innings, and we know that they're going to be absolute dynamite. So, you know, he is sort of the safest for me, just because even without saves, he's providing good value to your fantasy team. And if he gets saves, that's great. But if he doesn't, he's still a really nice piece to have.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, Hader was so helpful. And in a world where you don't have to have as many innings as you used to have, since there's so few starters building up those large inning amounts, which is one thing that you can cross-reference with Scott's piece in the Fantasy Benefit about non-traditional relievers and the middle relief market. Hader was so electric through times last year. I think it's easy to forget for some reason, because it's not a role that we're used to paying a lot of attention to in fantasy. But at the same time, you shouldn't forget it, because it's really nice to have a guy who's going to have a couple, two to three inning stretches each week where he's just dominating, just adding six, seven, eight, sometimes nine, Ks to your stat lines every week. Very valuable in head-to-head formats, very valuable in even the most traditional of rotisserie formats. Unlike, it was an unbelievable season that Hader put in last year, and I'll be curious to see how he holds up, because he definitely has a wonky delivery, which, you know, a cross-body delivery that sort of helps his deception. So he's somebody to keep an eye on. He's somebody to think not let slip too far, because there's hidden value here that people are not always looking directly for this type of player, but he's a guy that helps you in a lot more areas than you would first think. So take a good hard look at that stat line and remember that it's a nice thing to have in the mix of a fantasy staff for sure. So, but like I said, I'm going to be really curious. They stuck pretty strongly with Jeffress even after Knebel came back last year as their closer. So having three guys that end up with the 15 area of saves is a definite possibility. And I don't think that's where Knebel is getting drafted amongst the closers. I think he's being drafted as if he's a guy who's going to get a traditional opportunity at 40 saves. And I'm not exactly sure about that. So I wanted to make sure and get that out to you guys, because the Brewers don't think about things traditionally. And so I doubt you're going to see a setup like that. It is possible, of course, that it could work out that way. But I think it's far less likely than three guys all getting save opportunities. So anyway, I wanted to run you guys through these through the Brewers, and I think we did a great job. Scott, it was a lot of fun working with you for the first time. Thank you so much for doing this on short notice for us. Tell us anything you're working on. Give us your Twitter handle again, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah, sure thing. So, before I do, I did want to say I did forget about a guy when we were talking about the rotation. I don't think he'll even get to 100 innings this year. Keep an eye on Freddie Peralta. He's got some great strikeout upside. And just to push the Josh Hader Kool-Aid a little harder, if you get a chance, go look. September 10th, the Brewers played the Cubs last year. Six batters faced for Hader, six strikeouts. He was unbelievable. I happened to be watching that game, and just he's ridiculous. But yeah, so what I'm working on, I've been doing some updates for the draft guide, so don't forget to go out there and grab it. I am trying to gear up. I do a lot of DFS writing, so you'll see me during the regular season on the Friends with Fantasy Benefit website doing Friday breakdowns for everybody on Friday, my favorite slate, because everybody's playing. I'm also over at Pitcher List, so if you happen to check out another site as well, feel free to hop on over to Pitcher List. You'll see me over there a bit. I'll be doing podcasts on Sundays for us here at Fantasy Friends with Fantasy Benefit starting in February. And my Twitter handle again, Chusep, Chuseph Esquire. So you can find me on Twitter as well. Feel free to shoot any questions or tell me that you think I'm dumb or whatever it is that you want to do. Feel free. I'll respond nicely no matter what.
Well, again, Scott, thank you so much for doing this. I'm Chuck Anderson. I can be reached on Twitter at JustChuckingIt. I'm blessed to be able to work regularly with these people from Friends with Fantasy Benefits. There's so much talent on our staff and so much knowledge. And make sure you guys use that out there. Give us a 4-star, give us the best review you possibly can on your podcatcher for us. We would appreciate that as well. And enjoy the fantasy benefit for the baseball preview that you need, give you a little extra bit of security going into your drafts. So thank you. Thanks, everyone, for the time, including Scott. And we will all talk to you again soon.